Blog Talk Radio.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Yasagonige, Will Blue Otter, a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evenings and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous plant-based native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody, this is your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from Booger County in the mysterious Ozarks. In Mid-America, and our guest this week is Huna Lani from the Huna Institute at access-huna.com. Is that correct, Lani?
That's right.
Okay. And now, Lani, Huna Lani was a student of Max Freedom Long. And is that the correct way to, for, say, a student to address you, Huna Lani?
The word for any minister or priest or reverend in our language would be kahuna.
Okay, so...
It's the same as in Hawaiian language, which is different than ours sometimes. And all these throughout the 11 or 12 tribes of Polynesia with little differences in emphasis. But kahuna lani would be my formal. That would be like saying, well, Dr. Lani all the time. So just say Lani.
Okay.
That'd be fine.
So we call you Kahuna once, and after that, Lani. Okay.
That's right.
Okay. A lot of.
And that just means I'm ordained by a state chartered church ordination.
Now, you're, and for the folks that want to email you, you're at, what's your email address?
Lani, L-A-N-I, at Huna, H-U-N-A, Institute. .org.
And also there, we've got Ke Ona Ona, and maybe later on, you know, the women are always the power. Maybe we can get her to come on. My sweetie Betty, I think in the last year has been on for 2 or 3 minutes, so. But anyway, tell the folks a little bit about yourself and how you found your way to Huna and when all that happened and how you got to where you are today.
Well, in 1962, right after graduation from high school, I was a very odd person. That's a lot of teenagers are. And one of Max's books, Secret Science of Nine Miracles, materialized in our bookcase in my parents' house. And for a number of years, I kept on telling myself it was a coincidence, but I asked my mother and father and sister and all the relatives that would ever came over to the house, and not one person had ever heard of that book before.
Huh.
So it just appeared there one day.
I'll be darned.
And I was so in need. I felt like something had gone wrong with our civilization. And that people who were telling me what they believed to be the truth just didn't know it. I didn't know what it was. But I felt that something was really wrong, missing. And then Secret Science by Miracles filled that gap for me. And for the first time in my life, I wrote the author, Einstein Long, and my mother intercepted it, his return letter, because she thought it might be a cult. And so she opened up his response, which was really kind of sweet, and had his home number. So she phoned him, and over the years they had a marvelous independent relationship. And she immediately gave, after she talked to him, gave me the letter and we started correspondence.
Wow.
And she and he decided that I was so just in difficulty because of my adolescence that I would not go full time into HUNA even if I wanted to until 1968. Give me some time to play around with it before committing it. And by 1968, I was in Max's front room in Vista, California, a little bit of San Diego. He adopted me shamanistically into his lineage and ordained me as the kahuna of HUNA. And I've been a kahuna ever since, since 1968.
Well, I'll be darned. So at eight, you were ordained at age what?
Well, so I was born in 44.
Okay, so you're 60.
Huh?
You're 60 or some odd.
Yeah. So. You know, that's so strange. I was like in my early 20s, I guess.
26, I guess you were.
Yeah. And so here I am, at 60, and you turn around and look around behind you, and you have a history. I didn't know that. I don't feel like that. I feel like I'm still 25, getting me in trouble.
Me too. The problem is I'm 50 and I'm still trying to do stuff that I did when I was 25, and all of a sudden I need it now.
Oh, well, I'm a little different. I'm trying to do the stuff I didn't do when I was 25.
Ah.
Well, you know, the HUNA believes that we're here to get into trouble and get into as much mischief as possible, and then figure a way out of it. That's the way we grow into becoming a new angelic being, an amateur. And takes about 60 lifetimes, and then bang, you're different, and you don't have to pay the rent or go in the bathroom anymore.
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry. I'm just so anxious to hear more. So I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions and just let you ramble. Basically,
I'm good at rambling.
Basically, I know the folks would like to know what HUNA is, and of course that's probably a question that would probably take them 20 years to answer, but you can go over the highlights and tell us a little bit about spirit says you ought to tell us.
Well, okay, there's like, well, I'm not going to count them because I always count wrong. I always say, now the next four points, and I get to 17 and it is. I say, whoops. So anyway, Huna is about, it's a religion, like a tribal religion, like Navajo would be, is there Navajo religion? I don't know. Anyway, Huna is a thing. Whatever it is, I don't know. And it is a way of understanding the world and being here in the world. And so the first thing is the theology, which is that all of us, all life in the world, start off as being the one God, which you call Oyayo. By only calling Oyayo, basically to annoy people who have a name for their God and look down on me if I didn't. Because Oyayo really means fundamental truth. But anyway, so there was a, in the beginning, before the beginning, the Kaoli step, the step before the first step, there was Oyayo, consciousness. And then consciousness was like bored and not too bright. And so he created the created world and then populated it with aspects of his own soul, which are all of us. So I recognize Luat, I recognize the people who hate me or the people who love me as my God, my same as me. But we're all on different paths at the moment. And for the next 75 billion years or so, then we all get back into one. So there, our business here in this lifetime is to purify us, which purifies God, and to have a good time to appreciate things. I've lost a party from Luau. So Luna, a Lunian is a cheerful warrior and a party animal, sort of combined. And so we try to make life more imbalanced, so that there's more time to be a warrior and defending others, and a time for party sound, and for loving others, and to reduce the middle ground that you and I and everybody else spend most of our lives in just the day-to-day activities. So that's one thing, is to recognize joy and to appreciate creation. And to love the people we love, and then also to do our duty when we find it, and to be honorable and to develop nobility of soul. So that's the first square of theology, which is that you and I, and every person listening, as far as I'm listening, is on the way to evolution into being an angelic being, guardian angel, as we call the Anasuit. And it takes about 50 lifetimes, unless you're in a fast track religion. Luna is one of them, but there's lots of others. So I basically like all religions, except those who don't like me, and then I don't like them. I mean, I like
them. At least right now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And so, the means of my duty, for example, for me, is basically in, I'm not going to remember the areas because I always screw that up. One is to make the ki'i kukui, which are a, the kukui tree is a tree in the South Pacific and in the Philippines and India. And when I bless the nuts, which are polished, when I bless them in the white or striped or light brown, and give them to somebody, then they turn black on the person, and when he or she touches another's wound or sickness, it's almost always instantly healed. And it doesn't make any difference if the person I give it to knows about me or Huna or whatever their religious path is on. Doesn't make any difference if they know me or Huna. Usually these healings are happening all around the world. Somebody just falls down or gets an accident. A stranger will come up and say, do you mind if I try to do something? And usually if they're bleeding, they'll say, sure, go ahead. And they'll touch them with this walnut-shaped bead. And instantly it's healed. Doesn't make any difference what religion they are. And the other person's being healed, doesn't know them, doesn't know me, doesn't know who because it's a gift from God. So it's everybody's God. It's the Yayo. It's coming through Luna in the sense that your Panasonic recorder might have been made by a Buddhist or something. So it takes a kahuna to make a Kihi Kukui, but the Kihi Kukui can be used by anybody. In fact, anybody just can go to the website and ask me, email me and ask me for one, and we can make arrangements with them together. Another thing is holo cards. Kahuna Nui Max Rina Long taught me how to communicate with Amakuas through poker cards or tarot cards. To do readings with them, but in a different way than gypsies or whatever other schools are. And so Kuna Kiyonahuna, after taking several classes from me, created that as an online course for anybody who wants to study it. And dang nabbit, if people who don't take the course, the cards no longer fall at random, but make actual sentences from their Amakuas stand.
Oh, my gosh.
And the third thing we do is every year, one of the holidays set up by Kuna Nui Max was Makahiki, which is a celebration of a year returning. It's not a new year. We don't see new years. We see the old year returning every year, like an old friend returning, not like somebody new. And that's done with a sound greeting chant that another Kuna in my line Luna Perez Kimball created, and that's done at the dawn. And then later on that night we had all sorts of makiki games and ceremonies. And then we have the formal Ava ceremony, which is the sacramental to scare everybody. It's listed as a drug, but it's not like a drug. Well, it's known in Fiji, Fiji is Kava Kava. It's available at the most health food stores, just so we drink a lot of it at the formal ceremony. And then we do an actual fire walk where people with naked bare feet walk on a fire when I talk Kano on Earth. We're setting in the backyard on fire every year. She's very patient with me. So people, strangers off the street, anybody, whether they are calling out in the heart to Jesus or Muhammad or Allah or Buddha, I don't care. Because from my point of view, everything that's sacred has to do with the Amakua, even if they don't know it. And so anybody can be called by whatever they think is, by whatever divinity is within them. Even if they're atheists or agnostics, as long as they believe in power of good somehow, walk naked on the fire. And I've walked 20 or 30 times over these glowing coals, which is scary as all get out. And one time I broke the kapu, the rules that everyone has to follow, that you walk in humility, that you walk for yourself and your deity, not to impress anybody. So I broke two of those. Those are the two I broke. I was trying to impress a friend who was there at that office, I think, and I burned third-degree burns on me. And that put me in the second plateau of firewalking. Which is you firewalk. I've walked, 10 or 15 times in perfect safety, as everybody does. I'm the only one at all the firewalks we've had that has been severely burned. And then it's at that second stage, after you get through weeks of agonizing, walk, because firewalk burn you right where you step, on your feet. And the second plateau is, are you ever going to have faith again in your Amakua in the fire? Are you ever going to walk again? And I did, and it's been so sweet.
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
The boy Amakur, Greg Gilder, the Amakurs are the founders of Hunan. I was just having my life this week. And I just want to share that with everybody. Maxley and Long went to the islands, got tricked into going to the islands by miraculous stuff, just like I came to Una in a miraculous way. Just like his initiator, his person that adopted him into the genealogy, Gunanui Williams Brigham, was also tricked into going to the islands in 1872. And so William Tell Spring only had one student or hamana, and that was Gunanui Max. And 1936, Gunanui Max came over back to the mainland and Laguna Beach and moved in all of them. And he had two wives at the time, and the Depression was on, and he owned a small print shop, and that wasn't hardly enough to pay the rent. So he decided to write about his religious notion, where he had become adopted. But there wasn't any name that Whit Brigham had given him. So he picked out a name, a word from a language that was little spoken, and had no religious connotations at all, which was Huna, which means dust secret or secret, and it means dust or dust-like particles. Common word in all the Polynesian tongues, common word in Hawaiian, no religious connotations at all. It was just his way of having a name for his particular teaching. And then a number of geniuses were also called by the Amakuas to come in, and almost all of Huna was created by them. Gunanui Max created the basic theology, but like the Dawn Greeting was created by Gunanui Fred Gimbel, who was a friend of his, and all the practices of Huna come from the Huna Kupuna, the elders of Huna, who were all basically white folk. So we have a relationship to Polynesia and Hawaii, the same as Christianity has a relationship to Judaism, which is that if you watch the funeral of the Pope, the cardinals all wear a yarmulke. You know, so that's like giving a nod and a smile to the Jewish tradition. But at the same time, the Pope would not consider himself an Orthodox Jew. And most Orthodox Jews would not consider the Pope to be a Jew. So, Christianity is based on Judaism to some extent, but has its own history now. And likewise, Huna is based on Hawaiian. Hawaiian religions basically are called Ho'omana, and not called Huna. But a lot of people, because of Max's book, nobody would know what they're talking about if they said Ho'omana. So people are saying that they do Huna, and they mix things up and stuff. I'm basically your Orthodox, hard-nosed, Orthodox Christian. It's not as known as that at the Baptist, you know. So you can't believe me entirely. That's the way makes everyone do it. Everybody walks their own path. And Huna believes that everybody is doing great. But we're all working out the evil inside of ourselves. So everybody is evil too. You are, I am. And what we call evil, what the Christians call evil, we call the will to win at any cost. The will to power. And what the Christian theologists call the good, we call the will to serve. So that nobility in each person's soul is the will to serve in some way. And the will and evil in each person's soul is the desire to win without reference to service. And when that happens, bad stuff happens. But that's all God working out is his own evil. So that at the end of the created world, Lapanai, when everything returns back to the one, God has been purified by us. So whether or not you know it or anybody else knows it, everyone is it's just God working out his own evil and making mistakes along the way and getting better all the time. And that's how I feel about everybody, including the Pope. So the Pope is practicing Huna in a very odd way to me. Every religion is Huna, and every person who lives in everything that's alive is Huna, including the grass and trees and the swamp moss. And I think that's the end of my lecture on beginning Huna.
So basically, a practitioner is a person that has his very own religion, because he'll take, say, what Max and you would teach him, and he would add to it. It sounds like some of the other Huna teachers have done the same. They've revealed just different. Is it kind of like several blind people trying to describe an elephant, where some of them would describe an elephant is like a tree trunk, and another would say, no, an elephant's like a rope. And another one would step in the dung and say, no, an elephant is poop. You know, is it kind of like that, or is it that Huna was like all the old adage about a horse that was designed by a committee and ends up looking like a camel? Is it? Well,
okay. Well,
a couple of rhetorical questions.
The first answer: there's several answers that probably contradict each other, which is normal for our human lives here. The first is that anybody who's doing any good or living and trying to do better and live a good life, they've got my support. And anybody who's trying to be stupid doesn't have my support, but my appreciation that eventually will get it. So anyone who's doing anything good, that's fine by me. Second question, the second answer is the opposite, which is that Huna is a trade name for Kundalini Max's religious teachings. And those people who were taught by him, which would be his direct successors, the Una Kapuna, and myself and the other people who he actually taught. So that there was a feeling, I don't know how you say it, a style that, one gets from actually being at the feet of the person who's teaching, who was at the feet of the person who's teaching before that. So that my, personal relationship and adoption by Max, is important to me. And, that Max was actually adopted by Brigham is important to Max. And that Brigham was adopted by the last of the three firewalking Bakuna for white. So that I would say that there is a lineage which is, purposeful and important. I had a talk with Serge Kingwin, and I said I didn't have anything against what he was teaching. In fact, his teachings could be, all of them could be benign, and if they help a person to live a better life, then golly, I'm supportive of that. He just shouldn't call it Una. He should call it Searchism or something like that, because they weren't Una. And then we had a big argument about linguistics. Because the word Huna in English cannot be spoken in Hawaiian. It's, the word Huna in Hawaiian means trust. And that's what it means. It doesn't mean religion. If you meant the religious teaching next to long, it would have to be Ohuna. Because O means what follows is a proper noun. It's the name of the thing. So,
So in Hawaii, the old religion, did you say it was called Mona?
Ho'o. Okay, there's a letter in the alphabet of the Hawaiian language which does not exist in English, called the Okina. The Okina is a break in the voice. And there's one word in the English that uses the Okina would be the word Ho'o. Ho'o. Or a yo-yo or something like that. So it's a break in the voice. So it's ho-o, ho-o, mana. Ho-o mana.
Ho-o mana.
Ho-o mana, yeah. And that, ho-o mana means anyway. Ho-o mana means religion in Hawaiian. And ho-o mana would be a specific religion called ho-o mana. But there is a name, so. And native practices would be called Ho'omana. Maxian Long stuff would be called Huna. But there's been fuzzing out, or hazing out of things. And the trouble is that, people who go into other stuff called Huna, and then reject it, think they're rejecting Huna, but they may have never encountered it. The firewalk, psychometric analysis, heat, glue healing, the color reading, the many things that we do, the language, the Hunian language, which is different than Hawaiian, but has been worked on through three generations. We started to work the Huna language, Hunian, was the same as the archaic Hawaiian language spoken in 1872. But the English, for example, spoken in 1872, isn't the English of today. If you read the actual writings of people from 1872 in English, it's not the way it's expressed in today's English. So in 1872, Kanui William Tom Spring, when he created a new, under the auspices of Guamakua, the great guild, the company of angelic beings who created it, and tricked everybody. Okay, there's two things. There's one thing, is that I see things differently than a lot of other people, And how they speak is, they're speaking the truth as they know it, and I speak the truth as I know it. So then with the truth as I know it, and other people who disagree who are honorable people, the Puyamaku, the great guild of angelic beings, created Hunan, and tricked Willingtail Spring into coming to the island, and tricked Max Dreamlong into coming to the island, and tricked me to coming to Max through materialization. So all the long time, there has, the real founders of Huna is a specific guild of angelic beings or guardian angel, Brahmakut. And in 1872, William Brigham began to change the Hawaiian language to reflect the theology that was being taught to him through life and through his experiences as presented to him by Puyamakua. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, Hawaiians in 1872, that language was also continuing to change. Nowadays, there's a militant Hawaiian movement that's trying to change Hawaiian language radically into the sort of Tahitian with the addition of K's and R's. And Hunian is very different from that. Hunian words and ideas are very different. And yet, if I were to say, speak a sentence in Hunian, most Hawaiians could understand it, but not the way that we do. So like, for example, the word Amakua, which is so important in Hunian in theology, means an angelic being. Means what you are to become. What you, Blue Water, will become in this lifetime after you die, or a few lifetimes after that. The great awakening you'll have as an angelic being, a deity, minor deity. Whereas in old Hawaii, there were only four Amakuas. Four. That's it. Amakua to a native Hawaiian of 1872 meant a family god or a house god, and there were only four of them. And they were hereditary, and you didn't choose them. You either had Mano, the shark god, or you had Hueo, the owl god, or you had Mo'o, lizard god, and you had, I think it was called Ahi. I may be wrong on that, but the heel. So there were only four Amakuas to the ancient Hawaiians. But there are about, 2 or 3 billion to the Hunians. So if a person doesn't get deeply into what Max is actually teaching, then he doesn't really know a lot about Huna. So then they add things. And I just wish they would change the name to, just like I changed the name a little bit from Huna to Hunian, so that other people could still use Huna. I don't know. I'm done.
Well, now, shortly after you met Max and were, or not too many years after that, I understand you ended up with Frank Fullscrow. Want to tell folks about that?
Max died in 1971, and Huna just broke. I was having all kinds of things, visitations by deities, if you want to believe that, and all sorts of supernatural stuff, and I was fighting cults of darkness and protecting people that people were trying to kill, and doing exorcisms, which we call kalos, and all sorts of things like that. And I had no one to back me up. When Max died, the HRA, the Inner Circle of Huna, died with him. And so I was basically on my own. And one of my friends was a close associate of the great medicine man, Frank Fullscrow. And they were talking about me all the time, and I didn't know it. And so finally Frank Fullscrow wanted to become my, I don't know how you'd say it, not my friend, not my mentor, but guardian, I could.
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
So that when these strange things have happened to me, I would always, since I'm sane, I would always think that I was crazy. So then I'd communicate to him exactly what had happened, and he would do a pipe ceremony for me, and he would write back to whether or not I had a true experience or not. And they were always true. And he respected the my path in the new tribe, a new sort of white tribe. Anybody can join the whole world, but Max is white, and I'm a white boy from L.A., so what are you going to do? But who knows, a new tribe. Not Hawaiian, not Polynesian, except maybe it is derived from it. And Pine Falls Crow appreciated my walking in sacred manner as well as I could. And so he never wanted me to follow the medicine ways, but I was very familiar with them. I was a singer, and I danced Rocky Boy, which is a northern blend style. And at one point, really strange, so I'll just tell you, because I don't know, you got this out or keep it in, whatever you want to do. But there came a time when he asked me if I was willing to fight in a battle he was having. And it seemed really strange, because here I was, this punky, more or less adolescent, old baby kahuna. And so I had to think about it, because what I figured was that anything that he couldn't handle easily, I'd just die at. So he was essentially asking me if I was going to come up the pine race and die. And I thought about it. I said, Okay. Since I was young and who cares. So, I thought I was, as soon as I said it, I was willing to do anything I could, but that I probably couldn't do a whole lot except deflect their attention for a few minutes until they had taken care of me. I never heard from him again on it. So I guess he handled it all by himself. But it was really a startling moment for me. I really had to consider myself of where I wanted my path of service to be, or devotion. Would I be willing to die for somebody? And the question, I guess, was, yeah, but I didn't want to. But if somebody, here I am at 60, and put on firewalks and walk people across the fire, and objects turn colors when I bless them, and all that kind of stuff, and I still consider my fool's girl to be far greater than I am. And at that point, I considered him, everybody has their own scoreboard, I don't mind. But for my scoreboard, at the time, the next dead, Frank Volstroll, was the most holy person in the world, as far as I'm concerned. And, I just helped the walking donkey, said to them, do whatever they're supposed to do.
So you were up there during the, were you up there during the siege at Wounded Knee?
Oh, you want to get into that.
If you want to. Before we do that, do you need to take a break?
No, that's all right. I was like, there's like, four levels of, tribalism. There's like, people who used to be in tribes at one time that are now acclimatized to being a regular person in a regular culture. Then there's the next level in that are dancers and singers and have gone to powwows and have reservation ties. Still have people that they know in the reservation. And then deeper in there are the Indians that are very concerned about Indians, saints, in their own tribes. But not always, okay, then further in, there are the center of what's left of the culture. The, medicine men and medicine women and tribal elders and stuff. And so I was in like, I had friends that were in that third circle. So, when Wounded Knee was taken over, I don't know. I think you know. I think you smile. Because you start off as in paternalistic societies like we're in. All paternalistic societies that I've ever known are really run by the women. So all the tribal societies I've ever been into, the drama is conducted by the men. And all the real stuff goes on behind the scenes by the women. And, tribal stuff from where I've been is always as gossipy as can be concerned. So my internal friends, from Pine Ridge were telling me about when and what had happened. And, it was quite different than, what's come out in sort of the white thing, because the Pine Ridge Sioux did not like what was happening. And either died because I was on Frank Bull's good side. I mean, I'm just, I don't have any reason to have a opinion one way or the other. But since I had a relationship with Frank Bull's school, I took his lead. So if he was in trouble, then so was I. And as far as I was concerned, so, the old man and old woman who owned the trading post at Wounded Knee were critical to Pine Ridge with their absolute minimum poverty level economy. All the women would feed hair decorations and moccasins and knife sheaths all went along, and the men would tie brooches all winter long and then sell them to win the meet in the spring. So that was what a lot of them, that was the whole economy for a lot of the families. And so when AIM decided to take a wounded knee, they tried to get the Sioux involved, and the Sioux refused. So then they brought in enemy people. And so then, I think his name was George Wheeler, was the chief of the Pine Ridge Tribal Council. And so once Wounded Knee was taken over, he decided that he was going to deputize as many Sioux warriors as he needed, go in and take over the drain boats and take the AIM people out and dispatch them.
Vicki Wilson, right.
And so then the FBI heard about that, so they arrested him and put him in protective custody, which ended the Sioux ability to react against AIM. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, I'm told, the old man who owned Wimini train boats had a heart attack. And the FBI, which had surrounded the place, would not let anybody in. And so Frank Fullsgrove managed to sneak in to work the healing on the old man. And then when he left the train boats, he was arrested by the FBI for being a part of the revolution. And so it got all twisted. The Blue Otter, I don't know. All I know is I don't like people who are mean. So if AIM people are mean, I don't like them. If the FBI people are mean, I don't like them. But there are good AIM and good FBI people, and there are. Then I like them. And I just think that, golly, we should, isn't there enough work to do on our own?
Yeah,
internal
really,
dialogue to
really
keep us busy. I mean, we don't have to hurt other people.
That's true. I know Grandfather Rolling Thunder was my one of my first teachers, and he knew Daddy Bray, and I guess Daddy Bray died about the time you met Max. Had you ever heard of Daddy Bray?
Oh, sure. Daddy Bray was innocently involved with some of the unfocusing of Huna and to become Ho'omana. He came out to the United States to visit Max, and so he came into Max's home and visited, and they sat down and talked about the old days and Hawaiian stuff, and they both decided that they were, the other person was totally mad. And after they had decided that the other person had valid experiences, were valid, but mistaken. Big Daddy Bray and Max said they had a great time after that. The first time was to establish that they were both real, which they did. And then they established that they were both nuts, which they did. Then they could have a good time. And Big Daddy Bray chanted a blessing on Max's house when he left. But also he told Max that he was marketing, or that's what we would say now. I don't know what he would call it. But he was describing his, Eric Gray was describing some of the stuff he did at Sooner, because Max had opened a market for something called Huna. And so from his view, from Max's viewpoint, that was okay. Nowadays it's sort of an acid corrupting the more orthodox teaching.
Right.
But yeah, Max and Big Daddy Bray, as well, it's like Frank Fullsgrove and I walked on different paths, but we still respected each other utterly. And so Max and Big Daddy Bray respected each other. And my medicine friends who dealt with Frank Fullsgrove, who live in California, also were friends of Rolling Thunder.
Oh.
And I heard Rolling Thunder on radio. He was on shows, interviews many times. I heard him. Never met him, but he was Frank Fool'sgirl, or at least his representatives in California, would actually recommend people with problems, if they were too busy, they would recommend them to Rolling Thunder, because medicine people out here respected the Yuwipi, respected the work of Rolling Thunder.
Uh-huh.
So,
back then, at least they did. Now, nowadays, it's funny that now that he's well, that's some things that happened because of a few people in AIM. The funny thing about how all that got rolling is that there were some rules that were written down and signed by three people, and one of those people has since broken those rules himself, and it's just so weird. It's all about control and power, and or, you know, what you'd call evil, and it's unfortunate. Did you ever meet Mad Bear Anderson?
No, I never heard of that.
Yeah, Mad Bear was he was from back in New York and was a friend of Rolling Thunder's. And yeah, I grew up in, I was born in Minnesota, but I moved to Santa Monica in 61 or 2, and then...
Well, I was there at that point.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Did you ever go to the Elysian Palace?
No, I'm 10 years younger, so I was in like first or second grade, and after fifth grade, you know, moved down to Newport Beach and was there for sixth grade, and then my dad was an aerospace engineer, so we had to move, and Nixon pulled the plug on aerospace, and then we moved back in about 76, and we were in Laguna Hills, so real close to Laguna, so I'm familiar with the culture down there. It's a really, California is a really unique place, especially the Pottery Shack.
When I would be going to Powell's Elysian Park in Burbank, one of my friends that was the head singer of the Northern Drum, had Northern and Southern Drum there. The Southern Drum was Francis Sweetwater, and the Northern Drum, my friend, was Pete Looking Horse. And his son was about my age. And when I was going there, shortly after Hamness started, this Indian kid was totally drunk and chose me out because I was going in there to dance Rocky Boy. And he was all bitter because I'd stolen his songs, because I was a singer, and I'd stolen his dance. And I happened to pass by the beaten Looking Horse's son. And his son drugged me back in there and wouldn't let all the Indians do it to stop talking. Because I was protected then by Pete Looking Horse's drum. And, but I got inside and I really feel someone, I don't know who, because I feel like the hearts of these people, most of them, not all, were turned by people who were trying to lead them astray. The teenager who chose me out could not sing, could not dance, got drunk all the time, and resented me because I could sing and dance. And yet, I had worked at it to learn how to sing, to learn how to dance, not anything. And he could have, too. Or he could have asked me, and I could have showed him around, and the Indians or whites or whatever he wanted, who could have showed him how to dance and sing or whatever he wanted to do. So his bitterness, his desire for activity was twisted by someone else into easier. It's easier to sit on a log drunk and attack somebody else for stealing something that you could do. But it's harder for you to do it, yeah?
Yeah.
But I still think that that you could... There were 37,000 Sioux in L.A. when I was there, and maybe 100 or 200 once a month at Elysian Park, and dancing. So that's not really a large percentage.
Uh-huh.
And there were lots of times when there'd be Indians that doing blanket dances that were being put on by their families, and they couldn't dance. They could step more or less in time with the drum, and but they'd be having blanket dances because they were going off to war, and they'd be dancing in their army outfits or their marine outfits, and so then if they go around a couple times and anybody can join and throw money in the blanket to give them the money for whatever they need to have a good time, to have a going party or whatever.
Tell me your great secrets deep inside your heart.
I'll see you. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
So I just feel the whole thing got really nuts. And except for those few people, I think there were lots of Indian people who wanted something good to happen and took the easy way out of blaming the victim and hating people. And the hard way out was to sit at a drum for a couple of years, which is what I had to do in order to learn how to sing. But they didn't know. And so, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag. Well, you really had a rich cultural experience. Were you born in California?
Yeah, I was an LA boy. Living up here in the Frisco area for the last 20 years and probably moving down to LA as soon as possible. Yeah. Spending the rest of my life there. I'm gonna end up being like one of those 1875 people that never got a lived and died within 25 miles of each other. I'll probably end up back at Covina.
Oh, Covina, huh? Yeah,
Covina,
I had a girl.
Which is north of West Covina.
had a girlfriend there once. So I remember Covina. It's a nice town. It's a way kind of on the outskirts of L.A.
26 miles.
Well, what, I know a few years ago there was a real, resurgence. Was even news coverage about people that were firewalking from all walks of life. How do you account for that?
There are two ways to account for that. The paranoid, schizophrenic, delusions of grandeur way, and the real way. The real way is, I don't know. Now, to go in the more interesting way, when I... LUNA was founded in the crucible of firewalk. When William does spring and firewalks over luminescent lava under the protection of the three last firewalker LUNA, who initiated. So he became a firewalker. Then he died, and then he took on Max, but it didn't occur to him how important the firewalk was. And then the Poyamakos stamped their foot, so then there's only two firewalk priests left in all of Polynesia by 1940. So they arranged, none of them were in Hawaii, they arranged to have a Kone Kimwaki, a firewalk priest, come in from the Society Islands, which I think is a part of Tahiti, and do firewalks at the University of Honolulu, University of Hawaii in Manoa. And one of our members was there to become initiated and return to firewalk. So the angelic host, Poyamaku, was really demanding that Huna at the firewalk return to Huna. And so he did all the, our guy did all the promotion, publicity, was adopted into the family, a firewalker started to be training. Then the old firewalker died, and our guy, having missed the boat, so to speak, never firewalked again as far as anybody knows. And then, so in 1968, Max had hungered for the firewalk to return. Fire made sacred to return to Una. So I promised him that I would do that just before he ordained me. Not as a condition of ordainment, but just as what I promised. And then I was hunting for somebody to initiate me. Found somebody, was initiated along with Kiwanana. Talked her into spending her vacation walking on the fire, which is, and broke a glass, and, which is so thrilling. And then I performed the first wire firewalk on the Huna Makahiki on the same day as the sky dwelling fell from the sky, as a blue star and a huge trembling sound in the ground shook in Tahiti, and a mirror fell from the sky as a bright blue star. And later that evening, I did the firewalk on the same day that the last of the Hopi prophecies were fulfilled. And there was no choice. From 1968 on, every time I performed the Makahiki, I left a space for the firewalk. So there was no... In 1968, the date, March 22nd, 21st, was set for the firewalk. But it didn't happen until 2000. And so... The date, my date for the setting of it was set in concrete 30 years before it happened. And there it was with the final prophecy of the Hopi streaking over my head, the way from Tahiti to San Francisco. Didn't make it here. I thought for sure there was going to land in my backyard. I mean, since it didn't, who knows? I don't have any little broken off pieces of the final plaque of the Hopi. I just want to give them over for you.
You're not the true, don't claim to be the true white brother then.
Well, you never can tell, but as of today, no, I don't know. You never can tell, I mean.
Don't have the corner yet. Well.
I don't have it yet, no.
If you'd have been from east of Arizona, yeah, you might have started to qualify, because you definitely have a religion that's all your own. And that's one of the qualifications. And,
well, no.
Does Una have anything to do with the color red?
Yes.
See?
Sure. Red is a sacred color for us. Yeah, all of our, objects are wrapped in red, your red wool cloth or red tissue paper. And, we consider it to be the red path, a path of, blood, path of, the jihad within ourselves, the work that you allow of ourselves, sure.
Yeah, and for those folks that don't know about the prophecy of the true white brother is what we're talking about. And, well, it's certainly,
By the way, I don't have my own religion. My religion was given to me by my kapuna, my elder. So, there's a book being written on the Kii Kukui healings, and probably notified on my website, on the Hunahia Church's website, within a year or so.
Oh, great.
And, but the difficulty we had, I'm sure he's going to really love hearing me mention dirty laundry that we never talk about. And that is that he wrote a wonderful introduction. It just wasn't the creation story told to me by my kapuna. Those are very logical and comes from the islands. And now the book reflects a teaching from my kapuna, Kununui Maxtrian Long. And it's not because I think it's provable. It's not because it's logical. It's because it was what my kapuna taught me. And then, so that's one of my hands and reaching into the past. Then the hand reaching into the future, when I bless, say, a sacred tea leaves, they turn color to dark green, and they don't turn brown. And when I bless kukui nuts, they change color to black, no matter what color I bless them at. And when they touch other people, they heal. And in fact, in three different cases, all around the world, three different people reported that bloody wounds were healed to the extent that there was no scar. There was blood all over them, blood all over the person healed, blood all over the floor, and no place where to have come out of. And that was in three different people, four different occasions. But it's not, you know, it's not the normal thing. The normal thing is that the moment the Kii Kukui touches a wound anywhere in the world, the pain ceases and the bleeding ceases. And so I would say, from my point of view, if that stops, then I have somehow misunderstood the nature of reality and my relationship, my bili, with the deities that exist. And as long as that happens, as long as wood changes color when I bless it, that must mean I got something right. And I've tried noni juice, and it tastes like dusty grape juice. It's not prune juice. It's not bad. I've never had any terrific results. I've had some terrific results on my throat, because it probably sounds to you like I'm a little bit hoarse.
Uh-huh.
And I'm really not. The doctor shoved a TV camera in there, and one of my vocal cords, out of the two, that has become paralyzed.
Huh.
And they have no idea why. They put me through every test in the world, and Luna has no idea why. All we know is that it just got weird one day.
Yeah.
I woke up. And now I've been taking the stuff that Kianana sells that she got from Kumipaku, the firewalk leader, called Monotech, and my voice is coming back.
Great.
So, because normally it would sound like I was just breathing air at this lengthy conversation we've had so far. So, but otherwise, I don't know.
Well,
I've got
another friend up in Washington that has a similar problem, they just don't understand why. I mean, sometimes she can barely speak above a whisper, and but it's interesting. There have been quite a few holy people who have had problems with speech, or have had there's something called the sacred limp. They've either limped have had a problem with speech. It could be a sign, or just something that's given to you, that is sacred. You know, it could be coming from your angelic protectors.
Well, it did. I have a standalone church in Luna, so I was preaching all the time, just like I'm doing now. I was preaching all the time, and what was that getting me? I mean, I would talk in the, whatever I said, just the spirit in the walls, and, you know, people would be saying, all of this should be tape recorded, and I would never get around to it. And all this stuff, I've had a lot of... It's like what you said. For me, I just live my life, and I just lived it, and that's the way it is. I don't think it's special. When I compare it, were I to compare it, then it would be, I had a lot of advantages that others haven't had. And then all of a sudden, I was struck, and so I had to go to the internet, and I had to start writing, because I couldn't talk.
Uh-huh.
And I was praying, and my uncle said, well, you know, maybe you should prepare things to kick the bucket because you're going to die 100 years from now or tomorrow afternoon, who knows. But if you kick the bucket holding all these secrets inside of you, then the threads are lost.
Right.
And So I agree with you. So I came to find peace with it, but it's nice to be able to talk again. And to me, it could be that, as you say, it could be that I stepped out of the path and didn't realize it, and my Amakua sort of had to slap me on the nose to get me to go the right direction again.
Yeah, I believe Moses had to have a spokesman. And it's prophesied that there will be a man like unto Moses, and that he will also need a spokesman. And there have been other biblical teachers that had speech impediments. I can't remember who they were. And as I recall, Cocopelli had a birth defect or a limp, and that there are other sacred characters that have come and gone that have had, you know, either a limp or a problem with speech. And so, yeah, I wasn't thinking it was because of you stepped out of line.
And well, between you and me in the gatehouse, I'm only trying to do the best I can do. I'm just trying to walk the... make my life as meaningful as possible, like almost everybody else. If I'm some sort of, if somebody biographer makes me into some religious sacred person 150 years after I'm dead, fine by me. But there came a time when dogs and people started spontaneously to bow to me. Well, I thought that was weird. And even some of the great kahunas of Hawaii. And so I had to sit myself down and have a long talk with myself about that. And my own puppies, my losses, would kneel to me and stuff. Not trained, just, oh goodness. So then I had to come to an understanding that it was a response to something divine in them that they were reacting to, that they perceived correctly or incorrectly in me. And it didn't have anything to do with me. It was had to do with their own divinity. So then I felt like it was okay for me to accept it, so long as I realized that I was stupid and insecure. And that as long as I was humble and didn't expect or demand it, but accepted it, then fine. So if somebody waves to me on the street, I'll wave back or nod my head. But I don't think I'm worthy of it. I think that anybody who thought they were worthy of it would not be worthy of it.
Well, that,
people who don't think they're worthy of it probably aren't.
That's excellent advice for anybody, especially the more respected you become. That's the only way to look at things, or because you get a big head and it's all over with. You've lost all of your growth.
Precisely. Growth and what growth? Growth towards your own amagud, towards your own graduation, the next stage of life. Exactly so. You're a very wise man.
Well, don't say that. I might start believing it.
No, don't believe it.
Now you mentioned Keona Ona. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Oh yeah. Would she be interested in coming on and saying a few words to the folks?
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
She had to go pick up...
Oh, I heard her hang up. Oh, I'm sorry. Tell her I'm sorry.
He was at the at the beauty parlor for doggies, and he really enjoys that. So she had to pick him up. She might be, if you, when she gets back here, if we're still on, I'll let her know that you're inviting her.
Oh, yeah.
She's been studying with me for 14 years.
I know she picked up the phone, and I said something about her, but I didn't know she was going to be running off, or I would have said something sooner. But,
sorry.
So you have...
The interview over, and we've only done... I thought we were going to be enough for the 14 days or so.
Oh, no, you can talk as long as you want to. I was just going to give you an excuse to get it if you felt like, but if you want to continue, teaching, please go right ahead. I basically kind of ran out of questions.
Okay, then there's two things. One is that everyone is a part of God. Everyone is God. And therefore, everyone is immortal in the consciousness while being mortal in the flesh, and they're here to work out things. And that first thing I would want to tell everybody, whether they believe me or not, and especially if they believe me, is that they are immortal and they're doing just fine. They cannot get lost, that there is a will for their life, but it is only that they live their life as well as they know how. That's it. You cannot take the wrong path. You can just take a path that's faster or slower.
Well, I hate to cut this short, but I've had something come up and I need to go. But we could sure do another interview sometime very soon if you'd like, okay? All right?
Sure. All right, dude.
Thanks a lot, Lonnie. And yeah, I just had we got a big project going on here, and our car's broken down. The fellow that I just heard him drive up. That's helping us with that. So I'll we want to invite folks to come to your website and donate to you and ask for a Kukui Nuts and it's thanks for being on the show, Lonnie.
That's right. Be grateful. Be happy. Be safe, and get a cuckoo and do healings, and learn the Kalo and talk to your God.
Aloha,
dude. Thank you for it.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Bye-bye.
Let the truth be known to all mankind
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
Prophecy Keeper. Prophecy Keeper. Tell me your great secrets deep inside your heart. Keepers of great wisdom, truth of others. Let the wind blow. Let the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper. Let the truth